Father Yahweh, we give you thanks for this beautiful day. We give you thanks for the blessings you pour out upon us. And we give you thanks for the Sabbath day, Father. We give you thanks for the fellowship we have here today. Father, I pray that my words not be mine, but they be yours, Father, and that they resonate in the hearts of those people who hear it, Father. And we just give you thanks for all things in Yahshua's name. Hallelujah. So if you can't tell, I woke up this morning and my voice was gone. And so I've got myself some hot tea, and I'm just bear with me. So if I have to go slow and lean into the mic a little bit, you guys will understand. So I wanted to talk about friendship today because I think it's a topic that I think is overlooked. We talk about being a good brother, a good sister, a good son, daughter, mother, father, deacon, elder, but there's another level to this, and it's being a good friend. You know, family's great. You grow up with them. You see each other all the time. I loved having siblings. I know it's difficult to be an only child. Even though you get all your parents' attention, there is a loneliness that goes with that. But generally speaking, family's great. You can help each other through many of life's trials. But as great as family can be, there's another class that Yahweh often uses to help people, and that is friends. Now, obviously, you can be friends with your family. I'm friends with my family. I'm sure many of you are friends with your brothers and sisters, whether they're here or not. But in this walk, sadly, family and friends are often two different crowds. And Yahshua warns that family will often turn on you for his sake. And I don't want to put anybody's family down. I know my prayer is that everyone in my family and everyone in your family comes to the truth and they accept Yahshua. But in the meantime, we know, you know, from Yahshua's example that that's not always the case. Most of the scriptures I'm going to be reading today are going to be referenced from the NIV, just for sake of ease of understanding. Just so keep that in mind if it doesn't match right up with what you're saying, what you're seeing in your Bible. So my first slide, my first scripture is going to be Matthew 10, 34 through 39. Do not think I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set man against his father and daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a person's enemies will be those of his own household. Whosoever loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever loves son and daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take his stake and follow me is not worthy of me. Whosoever finds his life will lose it, and whosoever loses his life for my sake shall find it. Now, I know it's like easy to read this and think, man, why was Yahshua being so hard? Why would I come to sit? I think what he's trying to say is because the message I'm going to bring, you are going to divide family. It's going to divide families. Truth divides, and the same applies to family. He's not saying that if you follow him, every family is going to hate you. That doesn't always happen. But he is saying don't be surprised if it does happen. We in the body of Messiah often have to rely on friends in this walk because family aren't on board. Many of us do not have our families by our side in this walk. And if you do, it is a blessing. It is a blessing to have that. If you have that, take a few moments and be thankful for that, that they're here with you, that they're in agreement with what you believe. It's a rare thing. Over in Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12. Yeah. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who has no one there to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves, and a cord of three strands is not easily broken. You know, there's no sense, and I think this is something that I've seen a lot just in my life, there's no sense in taking this walk alone. I know a lot of times it feels like you have to, because you may be the only one in your circumference that seems to believe the way you do. But you know, we have friends here, we have friends in the vast network that we have around the world, and then those who attend the feast. And I know people who, they believe the way we do, but they're like recluses. They're hermits. They keep to themselves. And one of my points I want to make today is, don't do that. That's a dangerous lifestyle. And it makes this walk that's already straight and narrow even harder. When we try to do things alone, we're only giving Satan a foothold in our lives. When we try to act like a lone wolf, to have friends is to have support. And to have support is to have strength. And to have strength is to deny Satan access to your life. Just as we read, a cord of three strands is not easily broken. Now, that's not to say that being a good friend will always be easy. Sometimes it means bringing correction to a friend, speaking out against potential sin or shortcomings. Like, confrontation is part of this walk, and you have to be willing to not only be able to confront somebody else, but be willing to be confronted if you are falling short. I'm going to be addressing Proverbs a lot. There's a lot to do with this over in Proverbs. So Proverbs 27:6. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. You know, when I would like to think that if anybody in this room were to reach out to me and say, brother, you're falling short in this, that I wouldn't take offense to that. Even if it hurt, even if it stung a little bit, I like to think that I would be able to recognize what's happening and use that as an opportunity to build not just my own faith back up, but to build the friendship and the relationship with the person doing the correcting. We've all known people who tell you what you want to hear. They're called yes men. We all know them. Those people are not helping. It feels good in the short term to have somebody that laughs at all your jokes, that just, oh, you don't do anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with you the way you are. You just keep at it. You're you. You're so unique and special. And in a way, that's true. But if you're falling short and no one is around to help you recognize that, they're part of the problem. And if you're one of those people who sees sin and says nothing in a brother or a sister, and you just try to comfort them in a way that doesn't really help correct the problem, that's a problem as well. It's better to have a friend who will help keep you on the straight and narrow than to have a friend who enables your sin and tries to diminish your sin rather than help you overcome it. It says there, wounds from a friend can be trusted. I mean, if a true friend tells you you're wrong on something and it stings, just try not to take it personal. You got to think, if they're truly your friend, think of the person that you consider your best friend in this life, and that they came to you to correct you. Would you turn on them because of that? Or would you, you know, take it to heart and say, wait a minute, maybe I am falling a little bit short here. You would know that it's not personal. They're not taking a dig at you because whatever. They're trying to help you. If they're trying to correct you out of love, that is a hard thing to do, because you know it's going to be uncomfortable. If I say to somebody who's my friend, look, I think you should change the way you're behaving on this. That is an uncomfortable conversation to have with somebody. That is an uncomfortable conversation. It's easier to just let it slide. But that is not what we are called to do as friends, if we are to be friends like Yeshua was. If I'm slipping and my friend comes to correct me, it might hurt at first, but ultimately it is for my benefit. And that correction that the correction happened at all. And we will be friends so long as I'm able to swallow my pride and remain humble. Well, how do we make sure that we remain humble? How do we correct a friend and make sure it doesn't slip into animosity or further sin? Over in Proverbs chapter 22, 24 through 25. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered person, and do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn their ways and get yourself ensnared. That's not to say people with anger problems are, you know, no. You know, you're not allowed to be here. You know, everybody can be turned around. However, if you've got somebody in your life that's been on this walk with you for a while and they're hot-tempered still, and they haven't, you know, decided to move away from that, you might decide to move away from them. A hot-tempered person, anger is infectious. Anger is very infectious. Look, watch the news. See these riots that start up over nothing. Places are burned down. People are trampled. Cars are turned over. Anger is very infectious. We have to be careful who we befriend. And that's not to say we shouldn't help people overcome that anger. We absolutely should. But we really shouldn't rub elbows with folks who do not have their anger under control. Because as I said, anger is infectious. And we don't want to become subject to the very sin we're trying to pull people out of. Over in Matthew chapter 7, verse 5, "You hypocrite, take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." You know, this verse is quoted a lot by people who follow it up with, "Don't judge me. Don't judge me. You're not supposed to judge me." And that's true. You know, we're not to judge people in matters of, I believe, in salvation and things like that. We don't get to decide. That's not our job. But it says here, take first the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. So, you know, if you have a person with an anger problem who you're dealing with, make sure your anger's in check before you go help them try to deal with theirs. If you've got somebody, if a friend in the faith is struggling with lust or greed or whatever, make sure that is not a problem in your own life before you go try to pull them out. Because you're not going to help. If anything, you'll probably get ensnared right there with them. We are to keep ourselves in check in order to keep our friends and brothers in check, and vice versa. So we're to be good friends, but we're also to be careful about who we're good friends with. Friendship is a valuable commodity in this walk. To have somebody you can rely on, a shoulder you can cry on, someone to support you when times get tough, it's valuable. We are to... Once we establish this friendship that we have in Messiah, in the body, in this faith, we have to fight tooth and nail to keep that friendship alive and well. We're to help each other study. We're to prove all things. We're to seek truth and seek Yahweh together. Over in Proverbs 27, actually, Brother Javon mentioned this already. I love it when stuff like that happens, when people mention in passing something, and it's related to what is going to be spoke about. It's a beautiful thing. Proverbs 27:17, "As iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another." When we come across something that challenges our faith, we should be able to be there for our friends in Messiah. We are to be like iron, sharpening iron of our brother and sister, helping them increase in understanding and providing a boost in their faith and understanding. We should be able to help answer tough questions that might arise about our faith. You know, you have those people who have never been, I use the feast as an example, but somebody who's never been here for the feast, they come in here and they don't know what's going on. They're coming for the first time and they're a little apprehensive about it. They're like, "Oh man, what am I supposed to do? How is this supposed to work? Am I supposed to be doing something? Am I supposed to be helping someone? I don't know what to do." It is our responsibility as people who have been on this walk for a while to show them the best time they've ever had. To be a friend that's waiting there to show them what it means to keep a feast to Yahweh. To be ready to, they're going to come and they may be a little bit blunt. They don't know. Their iron hasn't been sharpened. But ours has. And so when those folks come in who need a friend in Messiah, they need a friend in the faith, any one of us should be able to sit down and answer those questions, the questions that you've been asked a million times, and answer it with a smile. Because this is all new to them. This is all new to these people. They don't know. And we should do it in love. If they're saying something that's maybe a little bit off, like, look, take it a step at a time, baby steps. Don't jump down their throat. Over in 1 Peter chapter 3, 15 through 17. But in your hearts, revere Messiah as master. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks, to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience, so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Messiah may be ashamed of their slander. For it is better, if it is Elohim's will, to suffer for doing good than for doing evil. And I know that I gave the example of the feast, but this should be a universal rule in our lives everywhere we are, period. We are not only to have answers for those outside the faith, but for those who stumble within the faith. Cain asks a long time ago, in Genesis 4:9, I don't have it up on the slide because it's like a sentence long. Am I my brother's keeper? Yes, you are. Absolutely, you are. And these friends that we have around us, these brothers and sisters, they are as well. Our friends and our spiritual family are every bit as important as your blood brother or your blood sister or mother, father, son, daughter, everything. Proverbs 18, verse 24. One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. How many of you have known somebody in your life when you were growing up? And you had a friend, and they just could not help themselves. They found themselves with the wrong crowd over and over and over again. And everybody else could see it but them. They had unreliable friends. I think it's pretty safe to say most of their lives wound up in ruin. They're miserable. They're in prison. They're out on the streets. They're angry, violent, wicked. You know, to have a truly good friend, someone who is willing to stand against your other friends, quote unquote, and say, you should really think about not doing that anymore. That crowd you're running with is going to get you killed. It's going to get you hurt. You're going to hurt somebody if you don't stop. To be that friend is incredible. That's an incredible privilege that you have. If you are that person with a clear conscience that you can look at someone and say, you know, with certainty that you're right, that you're on a bad path. If you have that clarity, you owe it to them to share it. Because that's a gift from Yahweh. To be betrayed or let down by a good friend is heart-wrenching. And that is another key aspect of this, is that you may try to be that Messiah-like friend. You may stick your neck out for them, and they may spit in your face. That is a reality of the situation. You know they know better, and they still hurt you. We cannot be one of those friends. We have to be better. We have to be the friend who, in times of trouble, like it says here in the verse 24, a friend who sticks closer than a brother. And we have to ask ourselves, do we know what it means to be a friend, a real, honest-to-goodness friend, a friend like Yahshua was to his disciples and to his friends? Let's go over what it means to be a biblical friend. 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. So, in this situation, these people were already practicing this, and essentially he was saying, keep going, this is what you should be doing. So once you weed out the angry ones who will not turn away from their anger, and once you weed out the friends who sow discord and betray and hurt the body, you're left with a precious few who remain And you have to treat them with that Messiah-like love. You have to build each other up, helping them when they stumble, sharpening their sword, be a shoulder to cry on. We have to be the friend the Messiah was to his disciples. John 15, 13 and 14. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay one's life down for one's friend. You are my friends if you do what I command. So, we keep the commandments. We're here on Sabbath, right? We're not strangling each other, fighting each other. Not a bunch of drunkards and gluttons. Praise Yahweh for that. So, guess what? You're Messiah's friend, right? Now, obviously, I'm not saying we should go look for a way to get ourselves killed. But I believe this is simply a sign of the depth of love we're to have for our friends in Messiah. This is the type of love we're to share. This is the type of friendship we should be capable of. There's a Swedish proverb that says, shared joy is a double joy, and shared sorrow is half a sorrow. I'll tell you, that could have been in the Bible. That could have been. And maybe they just kind of, it grew. I don't know. But I found it and I thought it was very, very appropriate. When you are going through trouble, or your friend is going through trouble, being there for that friend and having a friend be there for you reduces the stress. How many times have you been in just a dark place and then somebody comes up and does something as simple as just give you a hug or talk to you and just say, hey, I'm here for you. Just know that you can call me. You can lean on me if it gets too tough. That can be life-changing for somebody. Being there for them is an excellent way to reduce the stress. But also, you get on. It's a two-part thing. You have to share in their sorrow and their joy. To share in their sorrow, it is a benefit for them. But to share in their joy is a benefit for you. You get to share in that joy. When it happens for them, you get to share in that. And that is a privilege. That is a wonderful thing to see a brother in Messiah or a sister in Messiah succeed, overcome. That's a wonderful thing. And we're supposed to help each other in this walk, to keep each other on the straight and narrow, to build each other up, to edify the body, to be helpful and gracious to one another. In doing these things, we not only lighten the load when troubles come. Everybody's heard the phrase, many hands make light work, right? Same thing goes for troubles and tribulation. Let me ask you this. When it all goes down the chute, and this world is on, and it's pretty bad right now, but when it really gets bad, how many of you want to be stuck by yourself in your house? I don't want to be there. I'll tell you where I want to be. Right here. With everybody. With my friends. We have to be here for each other. To edify the body and to be helpful and gracious. And doing these things, we make everybody's life easier, including your own. But again, it doesn't just apply to the bad times. When the feast comes around, I don't want to be stuck by myself somewhere. I want to be here with Yahweh's people, with my friends, with my family. That's where I want to be. So sharing in sorrow, sharing in joy, friends are a key aspect of that. Both sides of it. We get to share the joy and we get to experience it when we're all happy and healthy. Not just when somebody's on their miserable, lying in bed, sick as a dog. I mean, yeah, it's nice to be there for them through that too. But then when we're all good, when somebody who was on that bed of sickness gets up and they're better, we're all happy about it. Over in 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 8 through 10. Above all, love each other deeply, because love covers a multitude of sins. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of Elohim's grace and its various forms. That last little bit right there is extremely important. Faithful stewards of Elohim's grace in its various forms. Meaning, what's grace over here is not the sole interpretation of that grace. The grace of the Almighty manifests itself in all kinds of ways. If you are particularly hospitable, I think of Margie when I think of hospitality. I think of that's the grace of Yahweh being manifest through her family. You use it to edify and build the body up. If you are good with your hands and you offer to help someone who needs a hand fixing something or building something, that's Yahweh's grace being manifested through you. Just because you don't stand up here behind the pulpit does not mean that you are not able to administer that grace to somebody. That's extremely important to remember. The pulpit, the office, being anointed and ordained and all that stuff, that all has its place. But it is not the sole source of that grace of Yahweh. If you like to cook and fill the belly of the hungry, again, that's Yahweh's grace. That bowl of soup you made, that's Yahweh's grace going forward to somebody who needs it. Whatever the gift is, you know what it is, or maybe you don't. If you don't know what it is, I pray that you study, that you pray, and get friends to help you figure it out. If you are curious, I know people who wonder what their gift is. They're not sure what it is. Well, let us help you. Let's find out what it is. We need all the help we can get. We don't need somebody twiddling their thumbs when they've got a gift that they could share. Whatever that gift is, just use it for the edification of the body, for Yahweh's glory, to build up and strengthen your friends in this walk. The author Thomas Hughes, this is a nice quote, I thought. "Blessed are they who have the gift of making friends. It is one of Yahweh's greatest gifts. It involves many things, but above all the power of going out of oneself and appreciating what is noble and loving in another." We are called to be blessings to those people around us. And we are to rally around each other in true messianic friendship. We are to bless each other with the gifts that we do have. And here's the thing, something as simple as being able to sit down and talk with someone new, that is a gift. Not everybody can do it. A lot of times people think that what they can do is insignificant. There's no such thing as insignificant in this walk. There is no such thing. And, you know, they say the devil's in the details. Yahweh's in the details. Even something as simple as pulling up a chair to somebody who's never been here before and sitting down and making them feel welcome can go a long way. We're supposed to lean on each other. And, you know, we're called not to lean on our own understanding. We are to lean on each other's understanding. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people walk away. They recluse themselves. They hide themselves from the congregation, from the body. And the next thing you know, they're off into something just crazy. It has no foundation in the word. And why do they do that? Why does that happen? Is it because they receive some revelation out there by themselves? No. It happened because they didn't have anybody to bounce it off of. There was no iron to sharpen their iron. They fell into a trap. We read it every Sabbath. Don't forsake the gathering of yourselves together. That is extremely important. Again, iron sharpens iron. And you know, you can be fairly sharp on your own. I know a lot of people who came into this faith discovering the Sabbath, discovering the names, discovering the foods. They discovered all of these things on their own. And so don't misunderstand. It's not like you can't come to a realization on your own. But you will never be as sharp as you are until you are in the body, practicing and flourishing in the body. That is going to be the sharpest you will ever be when you are able to work and lean on other people's understanding. Get somebody who might have a different insight than you to give you to give you something that you've never heard before. How many of you have read the Exodus story? Everybody, right? Everybody knows Exodus. But during the feast, we sat out there and we read the account of Moses and the Israelites leaving Egypt. How many of you learned something new about the Exodus story? Right. And so you can read Exodus on your own. That's perfectly fine. I encourage it. But don't deny yourself the treasure that is the body of Messiah. It's great. There are going to be times when it's hard, when we don't want to share our gifts. I like to talk and look. My voice is shot. There are many times that you don't want to help people in need. And we need a recharge. We need a moment to breathe. And that's why it's so important that we have each other's back. So that when one of us falls short, when one of us needs to stop along the way and say, I need a break, then the other can pick you up and carry you on. The problem is that if you're by yourself, like Scripture said back in Ecclesiastes, if a man lays down and he's cold by himself, how does he get warm? If you're out there by yourself and you hit a cold spot, how do you warm yourself back up? Sometimes you don't. It's the scariest place to be out there. We need people to pick up the slack and encourage and build each other up in this for a brother or sister who is faltering. Again, 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just in fact as you are doing. Now, I'm going to bring up Ecclesiastes 4 again. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. We are to pity those people because it is something worthy of our pity. It is a sad state. And while it's important to help those who are struggling, there is another uglier side to this entire process that needs to be addressed. I mentioned the ones who hurt, who betray, and berate the body. Those people are going to come and go. They can and they will negatively affect the body. Over in 1 Corinthians 15:33, do not be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. Now, this is a very true statement. If believers are considered iron, which when used properly sharpens the other and owns the edge of truth and love and honesty and grace and all of those things, then those who corrupt and sow discord are rust to our iron. It eats away, it dulls the edge, it weakens and stiffens the joints, and it ruins the body. The sad reality of a body of Messiah-like friends who are as tight-knit as Yeshua commands, is that there will come a time when we have to remove rust from the body. Because if we do not, it spreads. I don't know if any of you have ever done any sort of metalworking at all or taking care of a car. If you have a rust spot on your car and you don't take care of it, it doesn't go away. It gets worse and it gets worse and it gets worse. And eventually you have a hole. And guess what? That hole doesn't go away. You can paint over it. You can do whatever you can try to do. But if you don't remove it, it is going to grow. And that hole will not stop. It will keep growing. That rust will spread exactly like the corruption mentioned in 1 Corinthians 15:33. And if it's left unchecked, it will destroy the body. We're not invincible here. And this is where those uncomfortable conversations come. We're called to help those in need. However, many times those people are not willing to help themselves. Perhaps they're not really interested in the truth. Maybe they're only looking out for themselves. And they know Yahweh's people are a generous bunch. And they're looking to take advantage of it. I can't tell you the number of times that we've reached out to help someone just from a ministerial perspective. And I know people do it individually too. But I can't tell you the number of times we've reached out to someone to help, and it has come back to bite us. And rather than when those red flags start showing, when that rust reared its head, rather than deal with it right away, we try our best to slog through it. And we probably held on longer than we should have. And it left lasting damage. I mean, I don't need to tell anybody in this room about the damage that can be caused from stuff like this. We all know people, good people, who bend over backwards to be a biblical friend, only for it to blow up in their faces. Now, here's the kicker. That's how it works. It's going to happen that way. There is no avoiding it. You cannot stop it from happening. And to be Messiah-like friends, we still have to help those people. We still have, but you got to move the scorpion. It's got to get out of there somehow, right? However, you can help people and still have the ability to tell someone who you've helped to leave if they're not reciprocating that love and friendship that we're commanded to show. Got to give everybody gets one. Everybody gets two, three, five, whatever. The intent of all of this that we show to people is to get it, is to bring somebody into the fold who wants to do what we're doing. To be a loving friend, to be a brother, to be a sister, to help somebody. We've had people come in, hand out, they fill that hand up, and then they get mad over something. They're not willing to take it to the next level. They're not willing to take it to the next level. They got what they wanted, and as far as they're concerned, they'll burn the bridge on the way out. And that's fine. Yahweh bless them. That's perfectly fine. That's going to happen. The reason I bring all this up is because we cannot stop helping these people. They're going to show up, and we're going to see those red flags. We have to try our best to be Messiah-like to them. Over in Luke 6, 27 through 36. But to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies and do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you and pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn to them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. Give to everyone who asks of you. And if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, for you will be children of the Most High, because He is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. So my point in all this is that while these people are going to come, they're going to parachute in, and they're going to be making demands and breaking the place down as much as they can while they're doing it. Nobody should have to deal with those people alone. We should be able to, as a group, handle something like this. Now, obviously, there's times and places for everything. Nobody should ever have to go through a valley like this by themselves. We're here for one another. When things like this happen, when one of us is in a situation where we have to turn the other cheek, you should not be standing alone when that slap hits. You should have somebody there to catch you when you fall. When someone comes to seeking to do harm to the body, there should not be a weak link in the armor. This is why gossip and slander are so damaging. It's another example of rust that destroys our defenses from within and leaves us with doubt and vulnerability to Satan's attacks. We need to stand behind our brothers, our sisters, our friends, our elders. We need to work on our friendships to the point to where if gossip or slander or any other, quote, corruption rear their head, everyone knows what to do. And that this body of friends will be enough, will know well enough to start the process of Matthew 18. Matthew 18 is absolutely pivotal in this walk. If you don't follow Matthew 18, you are going to fail, period. And I feel very confident saying that. Matthew 18, 15 through 17 says, if your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault just between the two of you. If they listen to you, you have won them over. Other versions say you have gained a brother. That's the thing. You've pulled them back in, right? You're back in their good graces. You're back in their good graces. Everything's good. But if they will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the assembly. If they refuse to listen even to the assembly, treat them as you would a pagan or a tax collector. So if you try to apply Matthew 18 and it falls apart, that's okay. As long as you do your best to adhere and follow the word, to protect, build up, and to edify the body, Yahweh is going to be pleased with you. The sad reality is there are going to be people whom we love that are going to leave. They are going to be angry. In their mind, it will be, you cannot reconcile with it. That is also something we have to accept. But we cannot let the reason that that person leaves be because we were not Messiah-like friends to them. They can have all the reasons in the world, but that cannot be the reason that they leave. It's because we didn't exercise what Messiah taught us. Proverbs 17:17. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of A brother is born for a time of adversity. This is my time of adversity. I can't talk. A true friend will love you at all times, even when those times include correction. Philippians 2, 1 through 5, be my final scripture for you. Therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Messiah, if any comfort of his from his love, if any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded. Have the same love, being one in spirit and one in mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather be in humility. Value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but to each of you the interests of others. I think that this is something that's very important. And I mean, this is something that we all have to work at. This is a very active practice that we have here. This is not something that we can rest on our laurels. We have to be able to fight through adversity for our friends. We have to have the same mindset as Yeshua. So I'll leave you with this. If we adhere to the principles laid out in the scriptures, we will have a much better defense against the fiery darts of the enemy. Brother Michael Banik always says that we are to make sin our mortal enemy. And I agree with that. That has stuck with me since he said it. We are to make this assembly like a fortress. A fortress whose gates are never closed. Whose doors are wide open for anyone who wants to enter. But we still have perfect defense. So I pray that Yahweh blesses you. And actually, really quick, I'm just gonna bring it up. I have a little testimony I want to share. So the other day, Abby and I were on our way up to Columbia, taking Graham to one of his appointments, and our engine blew in our car. Now this is not an old car. This is a relatively new car. Had less than 100,000 miles on it, and the engine blew. So as you can imagine, I was super excited. And Yahweh started working almost immediately. Abby took Graham to his appointment, and I was able to take it, the vehicle, to the nearest mechanic, just right down the road. And they said, I don't know what this thing is doing. It's rattling around really bad. And he said, well, it looks like you threw a rod. You need to get this thing towed to Jeff City, wherever you need to get it towed to the dealership. As he said that, a tow truck pulled in with another car. And I stopped him. I said, hey, how much would you charge me to get this thing towed? He says, well, since I'm already here, I'll give you 50% off. Perfect. Get it out of my sight. I don't want to see it right now. And so he took it. He took it down there. And, of course, the dealership confirmed that it had thrown a rod and it was in bad shape. And they sent down an inspector for the warranty. Hallelujah, it was still under warranty. And so he comes down and he says, we're going to need to see all your maintenance receipts. So I had to gather together all my oil changes and things like that. And got it over to him. He says, yeah, well, we're going to cover it under warranty. We're going to cover it. Absolutely, we'll cover it under warranty. That's no problem. However, it's going to be $5,600 after the warranty. And I was like, what? What? It's like a lawnmower engine. How much could this thing possibly cost to fix? And so anyway, they said we would pay MSRP for this engine. Well, this engine evidently is made of solid gold. And I went looking, and I found one. I found an engine, 40,000 miles, and it was going to be $9,500 for this engine. And so they were going to pay MSRP, which is $5,100. So I could save myself $1,000 there, maybe. And so I was like, well, I can't do that. And so I talked to the mechanic down the road, and he says, well, I can find you one real cheap, right? And so he was able to find one that would have fallen under the MSRP, but it would have taken an extra like 18 hours worth of labor on top of the 24 required for the vehicle. So it was still going to be like $3,600 for labor. And I was like, oh my goodness. And so I thought about it, and I didn't know what on earth I was going to do. And so I called. It's a Hyundai. And so I called Hyundai headquarters, and I said, I need to talk to somebody. And I talked to a customer service lady. She was extremely sweet. And I said, I know that there was a class action lawsuit against these vehicles years ago, and the engine was one of the problems. But it was like 3 years past the deadline. So I was like, oof. So they had no... I was batting for 1,000 on that one, and I was not sure I was going to hit. So I put in a request. I said, what do you think the odds are of them helping me out with this? And she says, well, a closed mouth don't get fed. And, you know, that's a very Missouri way of saying, ask and you shall receive, you know? So I asked, I said, what do I have to lose at this point? And so I submitted a request to Hyundai headquarters, and I said, I would like you to fully repair my engine at no cost to me, please. That's exactly what I was thinking when I did this. And so, you know, months went by. 2 months actually went by. And every week they called me to tell me that they hadn't arrived at a decision yet. Well, the Friday before Unleavened Bread, I got a call. And they're going to fix it. They're going to take everything that you're wanting, that you need in your life. Just be patient. Ask Yahweh for it and be patient. And I'm very, very thankful for that, because I don't know what I was going to do. I didn't want to have to pay $5,600. That's almost what I owe left on the car. That's a ripoff. But anyway, I just want to thank you all for your attention. I wanted to encourage you with that testimony, because it's amazing what Yahweh can do for you. Even when you think you're, you know, up against the ropes, there's hope. Just give Yahweh an opportunity to work. Yahweh bless.